Welcome to the Flow Podcast, fearlessly leading our way. This podcast is a space dedicated to spotlighting the unfiltered voices of Black women in their unique leadership journeys. I am your host, Angela B. Harris. I'm an award-winning coach, speaker, author, and champion for Black women. Make sure you like and subscribe to this podcast to stay connected to our conversation. Let's get ready to flow. Happy Women's History Month, fearless leaders. I'm Angela V. Harris, host of the Flow Podcast. Are you ready to make a difference? Today, I'm inviting you to join me on a campaign that is close to my heart. I'm thrilled to announce that I'm competing as Miss Northwest Washington, D.C. in the 2024 Miss Corporate America competition. The Miss Corporate America competition was established in 2008 and highlights the individual achievements and successes of professional women leaders who are innovators and influencers in their respective fields of business. The live competition takes place on June 22nd in Orlando, Florida. I'm currently number one in the People's Choice category, but I need your help to secure my spot in the top 10. Why? Because this isn't just about me. It's about a cause that's bigger than any one of us. Your vote matters. As your next Miss Corporate America, I'm committed to championing the representation and advancement of women in the tech industry. Did you know that 56% of mid-career women in tech leave the industry? That's why my pageant platform, Accelerate Her, is dedicated to partnering with organizations to affect positive change. By casting your vote for me, you're not just supporting my journey, but you're also championing diversity and inclusion in one of the most dynamic sectors of our economy. But wait, there's more. Your support doesn't stop with your vote. Proceeds from this competition will benefit the Angela V. Harris Scholarship Fund, which provides scholarships and mentorship to Black students studying technology at Drexel University and LaSalle University. How can you help? It's simple. Vote for me as your people's choice. Become an ad sponsor, or attend the live competition in Orlando, Florida. And most importantly, tell a friend to support this cause. Let's make herstory together. Email me at angela@angelavharris.com to learn more about ad sponsorships or visit bit.ly/msnwdc. to cast your vote for me as people's choice. Vote now and let's bring more visibility to women in tech. Voting is open until Monday, May 20th, 2024 at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and every vote counts. It would be my honor to serve as your next Miss Corporate America. Thank you for your support. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Flow Podcast. I'm your host, Angela V. Harris. Today is very special because we are welcoming our very first international guest, Miss Blessing Adegame, who is joining us from London, England. Blessing is a dynamic global citizen and alumna of my alma mater, Drexel University. Go Dragons! She is an award-winning technologist and author of the book, Bound to be Boundless, The Journey of a Third Culture Kid. Blessing was raised in diverse cultures across Nigeria, Germany, Scotland, and the United States. She possesses a unique perspective that fuels her dedication to empowering individuals from all walks of life. With a profound appreciation for education, Blessing continues to inspire others using technology as a force for positive change. Welcome to the show, Blessing.
Thank you so much, Angela. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm so happy to have you here today. Blessing, I know you have such an amazing bio, and some people say a lady should never tell her age, but tell the listeners how old you are.
I am 25 years old.
You see, listeners, Blessing is proof that you can lead at any level of your career.
Yes.
Well, before we dive in, I want to talk about our backstory. I know we first met in 2017 at an event on Drexel's campus. And when I met you, I felt like I was looking at a younger version of myself because we had so many similarities. We both started college as computer science majors, but switched to information systems in our sophomore year. And we both share a passion for supporting women. And we also learned that we are both Scorpios.
Yep.
Okay, I want to start by diving into your background. Your bio says you were born in Nigeria, grew up in Germany, Scotland, and the United States. What is a global citizen?
Oh, this is something that I know I used to say a lot just because it sounded like a good word to describe myself, but there was a point where I actually had to research what does a global citizen mean. And from my research, I found that a global citizen is not necessarily someone that has, or not necessarily only someone that has lived in different countries, but someone who has an appreciation and an understanding of different countries and like the current affairs that happen in those respective countries as well. I think where I add a twist to it is that I've also lived in a number of countries. And I think after learning what a global citizen actually is, I learned that, you know, it's one thing to have a personal, practical experience in those countries, living there, schooling there. But I think a gap that I wanted to fill was actually having a more specific knowledge area. It's actually understanding what's happening in Nigeria, what's happening in Germany, what's happening in Scotland. And so, yeah, I would say a global citizen is someone who has a unique interest for the countries that they've lived in or just countries that they are interested in and have a passion for. So that's how I would put it.
And that is a very rare quality. So I commend you for that level of passion and interest. And I heard you say, you know, fill a gap. So it really takes a special type of leader to want to, you know, fill a gap and address a need.
Yeah, thank you.
I know you were very active in college, but what leadership positions did you hold before college?
I don't know if I actually did hold any leadership positions. When I was in primary and high school, I was a very quiet and quite timid student. I was just focused on doing my work. I didn't really want to be seen. I was kind of that student that would get A's, but no one really knows who I am. And I was just fine with that. But I think the turning point was when I did come to university in the US and I realized that, okay, well, to get further and, you know, I can't just get by being this quiet, timid student that no one knows. If I really want to get opportunities, especially at that point, I was looking for scholarships so that I could get through university. I knew that I had to be seen. I knew that people had to know who I was. And of course, that's also how I met you and everything. So yeah, it's ironic that a lot of people might think that, you know, I've been doing this or I've had these traits since I was young, but it only happened recently. But I think if anything, I learned these leadership traits from my mom and dad. And when it was time for me to exhibit these, it wasn't new to me because I had seen it in my parents.
And people say parents are like our first mentors. We learn so
Yeah,
much from them.
exactly.
All right, I want to talk about your college experience. As a freshman, you started an organization for women called the Fresh Women Cohort. What inspired you to do that?
So, as you mentioned, I started my freshman year as a computer science student, and I went through the first quarter, as we have it at Drexel. I went through the first quarter, had my intro to programming classes, my physics classes, and the intro to programming class was kind of like a big lecture. Had probably around 100 students in the class, and I found that I was the only black female, and two of my other friends were also the only, I guess, minority. So altogether, there were about three of us out of 100 plus students, and I felt very out of place. And I felt like to get by and to get through the degree, I needed a community that I didn't have at that moment in time. And so myself and my two friends, as the minorities, we thought, well, we have ourselves, yes, but we can only imagine how many other people are in similar situations, and they might be the only minority in their class. So we wanted to create a program that helped to, one, retain these women, because we found ourselves, as we did, we went from computer science, two of them went to data science, and I went to information systems. And it's not a bad thing, but much of why we changed our major was because there was a lack of support, and we thought maybe going into a less technical in a way major, there might be more people that look like us. And so we wanted to make sure that lack of community wasn't a reason why a computer science student changes to a less technical major. And so yeah, that's how it started. We reached out to Drexel faculty and the dean to just pitch our idea, and it turned into an actual organization. And I think the first year we had 40 students, which was really great.
Wow, 40. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, you were certainly a visionary. I had a similar experience. I think when I was a freshman, it might have been three of us, black female, maybe two or three black females in my freshman computer science 101 class, but I wasn't even thinking about trying to form a community. So you were definitely much more of a visionary than I was. I was just trying to get by. And like you said, I did end up changing my major just because when I was looking at the course of study for computer science, it was like programming class after programming class after programming class. And I was already struggling as a freshman just to get by from C++. So there was no way I could spend the remainder of my college career just struggling to get by. And honestly, information systems was a much better fit for me. And I'm so glad I made that decision to pivot when I did.
Yeah, likewise. It was a good turning point.
Well, I know you talked about kind of flying under the radar as a young woman, but now you're like a LinkedIn superstar. You have over 25,000 followers on LinkedIn, so people do know who you are. What attracted you to the platform?
I think I had, going back to my background of, moving to different countries, I've always been the only one, in a sense, whereas where that might look like the only one from a different country or the only new kid in the school. And so I think I've always had a curiosity and perhaps a pursuit for filling a space in a way, or being a voice, where being that extra voice or being the added voice. And so that's what I found on LinkedIn, where when I joined back in 2017, 2018, or no, 2016, 2017, I found that I wasn't really seeing students. And of course, LinkedIn was back then a very rigid professional platform, for specific purposes compared to what it is now. But, for my first co-op through Drexel, I was specifically working with LinkedIn, and I thought, well, what I'm learning here professionally, maybe I could try and finesse it as a student and use LinkedIn that way. And so I started to share my experiences, not just as a new budding professional, but also as a student, knowing that most professionals started off as students and it's a bridge that goes from one to the other, not just two separate entities. And so I wanted to help bridge that gap, I guess, by sharing my experiences. And honestly, I didn't go into it with the intention that things were going to blow up or, I started a campaign or anything like that. My sole purpose, I guess, on the platform was to see more students. And now, 6 years later, like the student population on LinkedIn is huge. So I'm glad that I at least was able to help that movement in a tiny way.
In a tiny way, blessing. Come on now, you're being modest. So you're one of the founders of a global community called the Students of LinkedIn. How many people are in that community now?
We've reached 13,000 people.
Kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
How does your education contribute to your success, and what advice do you have for students aspiring to follow in your footsteps?
It's a good question. I used to not take education too seriously because I think also the instability of just experiencing different education systems, it was a lot for me to really understand what it meant to be a good student or to just do well academically, because things were always changing and it took quite a while for me to adapt to a new education system. But I think when I came to the United States, and it was an abrupt move. My family didn't prepare for it. I didn't prepare for it. So there was a lot to navigate. But I think the turning point for me was understanding how expensive the education system was in the United States. And so I say this now that I made a promise to myself. It was more of a gradual process of me being like, okay, how do I do this? How do I get through this? Because we have to pay somehow for university. And I also want to make sure that because my parents are paying for university, I'm actually getting something tangible out of it. And so I focused my educational journey at that point on experience rather than just the theoretical aspect. Especially being in the tech fields, I realized quite early on that, just reading from a textbook isn't quite gonna cut it in this industry that's, fast evolving and changing so quickly. And so I focused on, let me get this practical education experience. So I did a lot of internships, I did a lot of projects just so that I can learn hands-on. And then of course, what I'm learning in my classes, theoretically, it supplements what I've already learned in the real working world. And so honestly, since then, even now doing my master's at UCL, I would say, of course, right now it's a master's, so I'm focused more on like the research and the theoretical side, but I understand the value of supplementing that with actual real world experience, which is why I decided to work and study at the same time. So that's kind of like a seamless transition between what I'm learning and what I'm working.
I know you have really mastered the whole working and studying at the same time. And again, blessing is being modest because forget what year it was you were in college, but you were enrolled as a full-time student and you were also doing a full-time internship outside of your normal co-op schedule at Drexel. So at Drexel University, students do 3 6-month co-op experiences. And I believe your co-op was like fall winter cycle. And
Yep,
you were
it
in school
was.
during the spring and summer. So Blessing was enrolled in a full-time course load over the spring and summer. And she was working a full-time internship over the summer. And what was your GPA, Blessing?
3 point, I think 7.3. Yeah.
Don't know how you do, but you talked about having to adapt to new education systems. So you have adapted pretty well.
Yeah, I've tried. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, let's fast forward. You graduated from college and you landed a role at your dream company, Microsoft, but unfortunately, you were laid off in 2023. I know that was very devastating as a young professional. Can you share with us how you managed to bounce back?
Yeah, it was tough, and it's something that you're not necessarily told because one, either someone doesn't want to, throw the spanner in the works that, oh, there's a potential of getting laid off when you're working at this company or when you're working in the tech industry. So there was nothing to prepare me really, especially with the attachment that I had with Microsoft. I had been kind of working or pursuing Microsoft since my sophomore or pre-junior year. And, I finally was able to get the Microsoft internship during my junior year. And then I got the return offer to start after I graduated. And I was so excited. I worked as a user experience product manager. It was a role that I kind of fell into, but I started to really love. And, after a year and a half, I felt like I was really getting into the routine of things. Only to start the year 2023, not even finishing the first month, and then I get the dreaded email that, oh, there's a business update. And yeah, it's funny because it didn't hit me in real time. It hit me a few days after, once they started to remove me from documents, once I had to pack away my monitor, my laptop, my badge, and it was like, oh, this is real. And yeah, I felt just lost because, again, no one really tells you what to do, but then all of a sudden there's so much information being thrown at you, so much advice as well, and it's like, I'm only 23, I'm only 24. I didn't expect this so early on in my career, and now I have to go back into the job search. So it was hard. It was really hard, especially going back into the job search when I did. The job market, even right now, it's just
Yeah,
horrendous.
it is.
It's horrible. And especially for going back into tech, where a lot of tech companies are even still laying off people, it was like
Yeah.
there was no hope. Because it's like, I'm so passionate about tech, but how can I realistically still see myself going back into the tech industry that year? And so it made me kind of think about, again, detaching myself a bit from Microsoft, from tech as well. And I had to step back and figure out, okay, outside of tech, what do I actually enjoy doing? And so that's where I was like, I've been passionate about education. It's not necessarily been in a formal way that, people have NGOs or people have, different kind of studies and they've done research. I've just been interested in education in the sense of students and student development and how people can really take advantage of their education system. And so, yeah, it doesn't look like everyone else's experience, but I knew that education is something that I'm interested in general. And so that's where I started to look more into the education sector, because again, if we know that tech is everywhere, that means even if I was to go into education, tech will still be there, even if it's not the tech industry. So I started to cast my net a bit wider, started looking at ed tech companies, and that's where I, funnily enough, had a talk with the CEO of an organization that I was a fellow back in 2018, I think, when I was in my sophomore or pre-junior year. The organization is called Rewriting the Code. And so back then it was a fellowship program for women, helping them get into the tech industry, or at least helping them stay in the tech industry as well. And so yeah, I had a talk with them, and now I'm currently working there part-time. So I'm able to, I guess, like match my interest for tech and my passion for education. So, things do work out, but to get to that point, it was definitely difficult. But Eventually, I got there.
One thing I noticed that that stood out as you were speaking, you said you stepped back and assessed, what gave you energy, what brought you joy. So in doing that exercise, you were able to essentially marry your passions with a very rewarding career and find your purpose, essentially.
Exactly. I think that's a lot of, when you get laid off, there's the conflicting advice of some people telling you to just, you have a bit of time, like rest, take a step back, and then you have some people that are like, go all guns blazing, like really just don't stop applying, like keep applying, you're gonna get something. And I was torn between what to do, because when I did rest, I felt unproductive that, oh, there's so many people that are probably applying and getting jobs, and I'm just sitting here resting. I think, especially after such a layoff like that, it was important for me to rest. And I think you gave me that advice as well, like just rest, because after that, it's traumatic, it hits you. And to go all the way back into the job search process that is already traumatic in itself is a lot to handle.
Yeah, you bring up a very good point, because oftentimes we've been so conditioned to oh, with hustle culture. So work, work, work. So some people might leave a job, say, on a Friday, and you're starting a new opportunity on that following Monday, but you haven't allowed yourself that time to kind of really fully close out that chapter. I mean, I know I've been guilty of this for most of my career, but there was like the last opportunity where I was working in corporate, I actually did take a month off to kind of just fully, rest and, decompress and start fresh, because we're bringing, I guess, like past traumatic experiences into those new experiences. So essentially, like, we're piling trauma on type of tra on top of trauma. So we have to allow ourselves that space and time to heal.
That's so true. Very true.
Because it contributes to our overall happiness, to be honest.
It's more of a, your future self will thank you for it. It might not seem feasible in the now, like short term, but you'd thank yourself.
Yeah, it's a process. I mean, you can't, it's a process, so that you have to work at. You can't just kind of turn it off overnight, but it's something we should try to incorporate in our lives. So I know you made a pivot and you decided to enroll in graduate school. What motivated your decision to pursue a master's degree in education and technology at University College London, the world's number one university in the field of education?
Yes, so it's interesting because when I finished my undergrad, and people are asking, what are you doing next? And even just in general, thinking about my future, I didn't know, or I didn't think that I would actually do a master's degree. Mainly because when it comes to technology, I didn't know what I was interested in enough to want to pursue a master's degree in it. So I kind of just put that aside and I said, well, it's tech. I'm just fine with getting my experience, as I mentioned about kind of my mindset towards education. But when I got laid off, I started to think of different avenues, again, not just jobs, but other things that I could start to pursue. And because I've been more versed in like the education field, I've seen programs that my peers have embarked on, even like the education master's program at Harvard. And I've just been a bit more aware of different programs. And so I started to do a search of my own. I knew that jumping into a master's in education as a program itself was quite a big jump for me, because again, I did my undergrad in information systems, and the main background or knowledge I have of education is just some, small initiatives that I've started here and there, but nothing concrete. So I thought that even my application wouldn't really hold much weight. But as I was looking around, I came across a lot of schools in the UK, ironically, that have education and something else. And I like that because it was like, okay, there are more interdisciplinary programs than just education, especially because, again, the world we live in now, everything is interconnected some way. So I knew I wanted to do something that intersected with also my background. So I found the education and technology program, and I was like, What's like, this is me. If anyone, even just looking at the description and the different modules that they will teach, I was just like, wow, this is a dream. And of course, it was in London, it was back in the UK. And if you know me, ever since moving to America, I've always wanted to go back home. And so I just thought, well, while I wait, to head back into corporate, if that's where I decide to go back into, let me do a master's, especially in the United Kingdom, a master's program is only 1 year. So I said, well, what am I going to lose by educating myself a bit more? And at least through this education technology master's program, it will help me to transition a bit more into the education field. And of course, coming with a background in technology, I just thought it was a great next move. So yeah, I am here now, world's number one, I guess, faculty for education. And it's just amazing that I'm here, and there's so much to learn from the professors, from the research that's going on. And it's in London as well, so there's a lot of opportunities in the tech field as well.
That has to be so exciting. But I heard you say your program is 1 year. My master's degree program was 2 years. So how are you? Tell me, what is that like? How many classes are you taking? How many credits is the program?
So that fact actually humbled me a lot. And so I personally decided to do 2 years because,
Okay.
the Drexel program is 5 years. And so I thought going from a 5-year undergrad to a 1-year master's was too much of a jump for me. And so I didn't want to come here and crash. So I decided to do 2 years, and that afforded me to work at the same time as studying. So I'm glad I made that decision because it makes the workload a bit more manageable.
Good. It's great that you had that self-awareness and didn't put any unnecessary pressure onto
Right.
yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, I know you're a newly published author. First of all, how did you find time to write a book and tell us what the book is about?
So the book is called Bound to Be Boundless, The Journey of a Third Culture Kid. And it is basically somewhat of a memoir. It talks about my journey, being born in Nigeria and growing up in the different countries I'd grown up in, and just the different things that I had learned and gone through, the different experiences I've had, and how that shaped who I am now. And I personally wrote the book because, again, in the world that we live in now, we see that globalization is a thing. Companies are becoming global, they're becoming multinational, and people are also living in different countries to where they were actually born. And so growing up, I didn't have any articles to read or just any, I guess, support for someone like me who has lived in so many different countries, had different accents. Like I just didn't have that support, and it was very lonely. And so I wanted to kind of create that support system, at least whether you are a global citizen or a third culture kid like me, and you need that support, you have it. But also to educate other people, because I know some of my friends find it difficult because either I have, my different accents that come up every now and then, or can't necessarily relate to their upbringing because I spent, my nursery years in Germany. And so what I learned, or like nursery rhymes in Germany, are going to be completely different from in the UK or in the US. And so ultimately, I just wanted to provide a bit of education about what it's like, and also the benefit that we have as global citizens or as third culture kids, and when it comes to providing value for the companies that we work at, for the friendships that we have, and also just the spaces that we're in as well, because I know it can seem lonely, but I think it's a very unique trait that we have. So, yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
So when you're not in school, what exciting projects are you working on right now?
So, good question. The one thing about me is that I, because of also how I've grown up, my dad is a professor, and so even just being at home, we were always like, our house was never empty. There was always students, always international students, PhD students, different families coming in and out. It's kind of like a revolving door. And so wherever I go, I try and find or create a community of international students. Again, going back to that idea of like living in one place and finding yourself in another country and just having to assimilate and deal with a culture shock. And so I think I wouldn't necessarily say it's a project or anything, but I've just really enjoyed creating that community for some international students here at UCL. Bearing in mind, I'm also technically an international student because I've never lived in England. So it's nice to just spend time with them, explore London a little bit, and just, yeah, get to know each other, figure out how we can support each other. So I think that's so far what I have the capacity for, but it's good because I think it helps me to forget about school and forget about work for the meantime.
Yeah, so you're a global community builder.
Yes.
As a young leader, what legacy do you hope to leave, and what message would you like to convey to other emerging leaders, especially those in the tech industry?
So I'll answer the question about the tech industry first. I think something that I am learning is, yeah, to step forward, you know, similar to how in my computer science class, it was myself and my two friends who were the minority, and we could have just left, you know, switched majors and not cared about the space that we were leaving behind, but we kind of just took it as a responsibility because we didn't want other people to go through what we went through. And so I think even as tech leaders, because of how this industry is dominated, I think it can be scary to feel like, oh, I'm the only one, like it's too much pressure on me, everyone's looking on at me, or oh, I don't have enough backing, no one's supporting me, I don't have sponsors. But the same way that we were able to get, you know, sponsorship at Drexel University, I do believe that there are allies and there are people, even if it's just one person, that can help you get to where you need to get to. But again, at the end of the day, just it takes you stepping out and it's going to be uncomfortable. Funnily enough, I went to a conference today. It was called BETS. It's a EdTech, the world's biggest EdTech expo and conference, here in London, and it was huge. There were thousands of people there, but as soon as I walked in, I didn't see anyone that looked like me. And I walked around the entire venue and I just felt very uncomfortable. I felt very anxious. I felt like no one was seeing me, like I was a ghost. And I did end up leaving because it was too much. And I started to think about how many other people have been in that position where they go into space, they don't feel comfortable, and then they leave. And I got some encouragement that, you know, maybe I'm supposed to be the one that is there so that when someone else comes in and they see me, it's like, okay, there's at least one person that looks like me. And so if you can imagine, if everyone's doing that, then that's how I guess the community slowly forms. But going back to the question of just general leadership in young people and in students, I think something that I've learned is to observe and then act. So, you know, there's always this drive, I guess, for some people to just work, and just create and create. And it's not a bad thing, but at least something that has helped me is just to observe and see what is the actual need here. Like, what do people need? And what can I use from my experience or from my knowledge or from my community to provide for that need? And I think that's what makes a great leader, because a leader isn't just someone that like takes action, but kind of observes and understands and makes sure that their action is not necessarily profitable, but it's relevant to the people that, you know. And then lastly, I would also say, similar to how I wasn't necessarily a leader or a leadership in a leadership position. When I started, there were traits that I did have. And I know that's something that a lot of young people feel like they can't be a leader without the title. But
Yeah.
something that I challenged a lot, that I was like, no, you know what? I'm even, the main thing that, or one of the main things I learned from you was this whole idea of scholarships. And I thought, oh, once I'm a philanthropist, once I have so much money, then I can do the scholarship. But yeah, I realized that it doesn't, I don't have to wait for that, that time that may come in 20 years, maybe 10 years, maybe 30 years. But as a student myself, I can save up, even if it's $500, I can save that up and help another student, because at the end of the day, that's what leadership is. It's how you act on issues, whether you have the title or not. So that's something I learned from you as well.
Well, that's so powerful. What you said, I feel like we get so caught up on the title. I know from my personal experience, I've worked for leaders that had the title, and honestly, they weren't good leaders at all. So we need to just kind of shift the narrative about what leadership looks like. You don't need a title to be a leadership. And at the end of the day, we are leaders of ourselves. It's by motivating ourselves to do things. Everyone is a leader in their own right. And so we need to just get that. You have to have a high powered title or work for a certain company or make a certain amount of money to be viewed as a leader.
That's a good point. And something I would add to that as well is that I learned how to lead people, I guess, in my backyard. And I say that in a way that before trying to lead a global community, I tried to lead my family. I tried to lead my siblings. As you said,
Yeah.
leading yourself, leading your friends, and just starting with the community that you have now, because it humbles you and it prepares you for when you start to lead the masses. So,
Yeah.
people say don't despise humble beginnings or small beginnings. So I think that is true as well when it comes to your leadership journey.
Yeah. So you've had such an incredible amount of success and you're under 30 years old. What's been the most pivotal experience that contributed to your success?
Oh, I think, honestly, I would say back in 2018, when I guess my whole LinkedIn journey set off. And for me, that was huge because, again, I have, or I had been very timid, very quiet. I didn't like the spotlight being on me. Even when I'm in group settings, I don't like having the attention. And so for now, me to be on this global platform and having so many views on my content and everyone hearing my story and all of that stuff, it was a lot for me. But it showed me the power of sharing your story, because at the end of the day, if you don't talk, if you don't use your voice, no one's going to hear you. And so it was through that that a lot of opportunities came my way, whether it's scholarships, whether it's job opportunities, whether it's speaking opportunities. There was just so much, and I honestly think that that was the starting point to the blessing that you see now, because it forced me to go out of my comfort zone, not necessarily for me, but because I was speaking up for my fellow students. It was like, okay, this is bigger than me. I have a vision that I'm trying to reach. And so I just knew that the spotlight on me was now just part of it, and there was a reason for it, and there was a purpose in me using my voice, even being that shy kid, because I think it also encourages other people that aren't necessarily the talkative people, or when they're younger, when people, maybe your auntie is saying that, oh, you're gonna be the president, you're gonna talk and fill rooms and things like that. What about the kids that are quiet and they just like to stay and keep to themselves? I think it shows them that, where you started isn't where you need to end. And there are also just life experiences that can help you evolve into who you're meant to be. And so, yeah, I'm just grateful for that.
You said if you don't use your voice, no one will hear you.
It's true.
Well, I know self-care is an important part of leadership that is sometimes overlooked. What do you do to recharge when you aren't fearlessly leading?
Good question. Funnily enough, this is also something that I practiced when I was in university, especially as you mentioned, being a full-time student, being a full-time intern. It was a lot for me at that time. But something that I practiced early on was having this like reward system. And so there was this one show that I loved watching, and I would create this kind of system where once I finished my homework for the day or any task that I have for the day, I would finish the day by watching this show. And that was my way of rewarding myself. It was my way of just relaxing and not having to worry about work, not having to worry about schoolwork or anything like that. Additionally, I also started to implement, I guess, like self-care days. I remember my calendar would always be packed from Monday to Friday, but every Saturday I would equally pack my calendar, but with self-care activities. And as someone who's an avid calendar user, I knew that I needed to treat my self-care the same way I treat every other task or activity. And so that helped me to prioritize it because, yeah, if you're pouring out so much, you also need to refill your cup. And I knew on many occasions, I had to learn the hard way when I thought that I could keep going on empty and then I would crash. And I'm like, oh, this isn't sustainable. So I realized that instead of going so hard for a quarter and then breaking down, at the end of the quarter, I would rather just implement days throughout the quarter, every week, if every few weeks or every month where I'm continuously resting so that it doesn't come to a point where it's like a brute force. I have to rest. So I think just creating a habit of it, and realizing that rest is also productive. I think that I had to rewire it in my brain. It's like, oh, I always feel like I need to do something.
So I'm curious, which show were you watching back in 2018? What was your reward show?
So it actually still is my show right now, and I've been watching it for the past probably like 11 years or so. It's a British soap opera called EastEnders. And back then when I was in uni, I watched it mainly because I still wanted to keep my accent. So it's just like one of those nostalgic things. But now that I'm back in the UK, it's still a show that I really like. It's a drama, so when you watch it, you don't have to think too much. It's of course it has, real life stories, but it was just one of those shows that I felt like I transported back into my life in the UK, and it was just nice to kind of get away from real life problems. So,
Nice. I like that.
yeah.
Well, Blessing, this has been such a great conversation. How can our listeners stay connected with you?
Yes, so definitely follow me on LinkedIn. The name is just Blessing Adogame. And of course, with my book out as well, it is on Amazon, whether you're in the UK or the US or anywhere that has an Amazon office. You're able to type in Bound to Be Boundless, and hopefully you should see the book there. So I would love if you can support me by purchasing the book and sharing it with your friends and peers as well.
Blessing, thank you so much for sharing your incredible journey and your insights with us today. You are truly an inspiration, and I admire all of the work that you are doing. To our listeners, if you are early in your career, let Blessing's story be an example of how you can make an impact as an emerging leader. To the rest of the world, watch out because Blessing is on the rise. I see her on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, so make sure you look out for that. And also, make sure you purchase a copy of her book available on Amazon. Thank you for listening today. Until next time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Flow Podcast. As we wrap up today's episode, always remember your unique path, your voice, and your leadership matter. If you loved what you heard, subscribe now to stay updated on our latest episodes. Take a moment to leave a review and share this episode with someone who can benefit from these conversations. You can stay connected with me on Instagram at The Flow Podcast with Angela, or visit me on the web at angelavharris.com. Until next time, take care, stay inspired, and keep fearlessly leading in your own way.